The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank, the bank for Kiwi looking to get ahead in business and in life, a bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify, a bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose, Kiwi making Kiwi better off. Well, a year on from those amazing floods that hit Auckland on anniversary weekend, and then a few days later swamped the Hawke's Bay and the east coast of the North Island, let alone Northland, with the worst rains we've seen, in which it's clear were at least partly caused by the heating climate. And we've only just begun, really. 2023 was a year when we, for the first time, went over 1.5 degrees warmer than pre-industrial levels. And it's clear that as we heat the planet, the storms become more frequent and more intense. And the Cyclone Gabrielle and Auckland anniversary events were the fruit of that climate change. And a fairly bitter fruit it was, because we weren't ready. And the question a year on is, are we more ready than we were a year ago? And sadly, the answer is no, for a bunch of reasons. Firstly, the response to Gabrielle and the Auckland anniversary floods was the usual ad hoc deal with what we've got in front of us right now with the resources we've got in front of us and just make it up as we go along. And some amazing things and good things were done. But as the floodwaters receded and as we understood the piles of silt that meant that large parts of, for example, the Esk Valley and, of course, many parts of West Auckland and the east coast of the North Island were likely to be uninhabitable, and that the homes that had been valuable and someone's home were suddenly no longer a home. The question became, how are people going to be compensated? How are they going to be helped? Are they going to be hung out to dry, literally? And that it became a really complicated and difficult question for councils, for the government, and then ultimately for insurers, because there's a bunch of actors at play here, some of whom want to work together, some of whom would like to shift the cost to someone else, some of whom are completely shocked and weren't thinking that anything like this would happen, others who knew something like this would happen and didn't really want to be there when it did, and are thinking further ahead to a climate that will warm 2 degrees, maybe even 3 degrees by the end of the century, and thinking ahead to what sort of events that might create. A year on from these floods, we aren't ready. We don't have a Climate Adaptation Act. It's not clear next time who will pay to rebuild the bridges and the roads and the railways, exactly who will get bought out if their home becomes unlivable, exactly whether those homes can be insured privately in the future, or whether we'll need some sort of state-funded hazard insurance. These are questions being asked all over the world as reinsurers, who seem to be at the front of the curve, the pain curve of having to deal with these catastrophes, start to pull out of markets. We've seen Florida, California, parts of the United Kingdom, and of course, as we've discovered over the last year, some parts of Aotearoa New Zealand become uninsurable. But this is not in any sort of organised or, frankly, sane or fair way. There's a lot of ad hocness about it. should someone who bought a very expensive but crumbly piece of land on a clifftop, should they be compensated by taxpayers and ratepayers at large? Or for someone who's been in a property for decades and decades, before anyone was talking about climate change, should they be compensated? None of these questions have been resolved in a Climate Adaptation Act. And the sense we get a year on is that no one really wants to have that tough conversation, because when you do, the answers are ugly. They are, you have to move out of your home and you may not be fully compensated. Or that second or third home, that batch, the one that you could live without, maybe you won't get any compensation at all. And then questions like, who will pay to insure? And what about those people who actually can't afford the insurance? Or maybe agreed to a policy years and years ago, particularly if it was a policy that paid for the cost of rebuilding, that doesn't actually mean that they can rebuild their home anymore simply because of the increases in costs. We're at a point now, for example, where still homes are being approved in Auckland in floodplains. 1,873 homes in Auckland have been approved on floodplains since the Auckland anniversary floods. And we've just heard this week from the Hawke's Bay that a bunch of people who are being told to get out of their house are now being told by their council, who believes they can't afford it, that they have to pay to demolish the house. We're in a quite ugly place a year on from the anniversary floods. And it's worth, therefore, looking at the potential costs and the implications of not coming to grips with this issue. This week on When the Facts Change, we talked to an economist who's done some deep work into the costs, the implications, whether we should be doing things like building stop banks or investing in resilience rather than insurance, and also how we move forward in a way that means we aren't bankrupted, but that we are prepared, because the climate change isn't going away all that quickly. And it's simply a matter of time before we have another Gabrielle. This week on When the Facts Change. Well, kia ora and welcome to When the Facts Change to Roshan Kulwant, a senior economist at the New Zealand Institute of Economic Research, who's just produced a paper with fellow economist at the NZIER, Michael Beeling, about the issue of resilience and climate change. It's all very topical at the moment because it's a year on from the Cyclone Gabrielle and the Auckland anniversary floods. Welcome in to When the Facts Change, Roshan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm one of those geeky, nerdy economy type people who thinks when there's a big event, what's this going to cost? Where are the numbers? How many million? How many billion? Who's going to pay? Is it fair? All of those sorts of things. What did you find when you looked at the data and the papers and what's gone on about how much these two events together have cost?
So that's a bit of a simplistic question to a much bigger answer or topic. I find that usually the simpler the question is, the harder it is to answer a lot of the time in economics. So it's a very case of, you know, a storm rolls in, or there's a flood, there's a lot of damage. We're saying, okay, well, how much is the damage worth? And that really, what we found is that really depends on who's looking at that cost and who's calculating that cost and what cost they're interested in. There was a lot of discussion and a lot of media on the cost from the North Island weather events. But a lot of that was really focused in on the insurance costs. I think ICNZ had estimates of $3.56 billion across just under 120,000 claims for Cyclone Gabrielle and the Auckland anniversary weekend floods. But again, that's just cost to insurance. And being economists, we know that the costs are much bigger than that and much wider than that. It's not just how much is insurance on the hook for? It's about what is the cost to business from not being able to operate? What is the cost to from the damage of infrastructure and people not being able to go to work or provide for their families? And it's also the kind of wider well-being costs as well. There's been a little bit of work done to look into that, but from Newman and Noy that we quote in our article, but at the same time, that tries to expand on that and really looks at the kind of loss of value of life. But there's a lot more in that in terms of mental health impacts.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're right. We've all looked at the private insurance toll, but there was a lot of damage, both physical and not physical, that hasn't been measured and hasn't been insured. Could you talk about the uninsured part of the damage?
Yeah, so this was actually something that was really difficult to pin down. There have been some estimates, and really the one that we found was from an international reinsurer, Munich Re, where they've said that, of the Auckland anniversary floods and Cyclone Gabrielle, that around a third of the physical asset damage was uninsured. So that's a pretty big proportion in terms of understanding that's not being compensated, that people and businesses are on the hook to pay for that themselves.
Yeah, and do you think that we're in a better position now if there was to be, touch wood, it doesn't happen, but if there was to be a repeat of one of those massive events, do you think that we're in a better position to deal with it in terms of insurance and also the financial arrangements for councils and governments to handle not just the cost of the emergency response, but also things like buyouts of properties that are no longer habitable, or bridges that have and roads that have been and railways that have been washed out?
In terms of are we in a better place? It really depends on where do we expect the next big event to happen? When do we expect it to happen? How big is that impact going to be, or how big do we expect it to be? How many people do we expect to be impacted? How do we expect that to be impacted? All of that really feeds into answering that type of question. And in terms of making sure that we're prepared and ready for something like that, it goes down to there's more than just one role to play here. There's the role for central government. There's the role for local government on behalf of ratepayers. There's a role for insurers. And there's also the role for property owners and investors. Everyone has something to do to increase their own resilience. So it's a case of, what do people need to know and how big is that information gap of what they don't know for them to be able to start investing in these areas?
Yeah, because one of the ways to deal with these potential storms and floods is to, build up your stock banks or raise up your houses or whatever it is, rather than just buying insurance or, heaven forbid, just hoping it doesn't happen. So how should we think about this problem of, we should invest a lot of money in stock banks, or we shouldn't because that actually would cost more than the potential damage? What's the sort of framing we should put on it?
In terms of how we should frame this problem, we really need more of a standardized approach and a standardized basis of information for everyone to look to when they're looking at, how vulnerable am I? How much do I need to invest? Where do I need to invest? Even understanding is your house in a floodplain? Understanding all of that will give you the capability and the knowledge to look to solutions that you can start implementing. And really, from an economics perspective, the market failure here is one of asymmetric information. People aren't aware of, how much of the cost they're on the hook for. And we're seeing article come out where people are talking about, they weren't insured for the total cost of the rebuild of their property. and that they weren't aware of that. And that's really key, is for people to understand, okay, well, how much am I on the hook for if something like this were to come in? Because you can understand why people would think that, oh, I've got insurance, I'll be sweet, when it's not really that simple.
When the Facts Change is brought to you in partnership with KiwiBank to help you understand the issues affecting the economy. And that's what their team of experts is here to do too. Here's KiwiBank economist Sabrina Delgado on the current grim status of the global and local economy.
Globally, economic output and activity is slowing. Higher interest rates are weighing heavily on demand and crushing activity. It's not pretty, but it's what's needed to bring down inflation. Here in Aotearoa, the outlook is soft at best. Our impressive surge in net migration helps lift activity, but still the economy is weakening under the weight of the Reserve Bank and a softening global backdrop.
Visit kiwibank.co.nz to stay up to date with detailed economic analysis and forecasts from Sabrina and other KiwiBank experts. They take big issues from both here and overseas and make them relevant to Kiwi businesses.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
So what sort of information should people be looking for, and also how could the government and councils provide the right type of information so everyone is informed as completely as possible at the same time? Because you're right, there's a risk here that some people know a lot more than others and can, you know, flick on properties or choose to insure or not insure, knowing that someone else might pay.
The key role for the government is to reduce some of these barriers that you know, various roles, not just people and property owners, but also communities and businesses and insurers and local government, reducing some of these barriers like information asymmetries, any uncertainty, and to support efficient and equitable outcomes. That's really kind of where we propose the government's role is in our piece. There's a lot of information out there. That's one of the kind of learnings that I had from doing this research, is that there is a lot of information out there in all these various forms, and it can be really difficult to try to tie it all together to be like, okay, well what is it? What is the risk profile for me, for my property, for the area, for my community or my area that I live in? And that's a really difficult question to answer. So there could be a lot more, there's a lot of work to do in terms of standardizing this information and putting it out there for people to take on and to be able to digest and use that information to make informed decisions about where they invest in their own resilience. Then on the other side of things, there is also the kind of moral hazard of the government becoming the insurer of last resort. You mentioned earlier that there's things like council buyouts and government buyouts, and there's a risk that that's going to become a bigger and bigger check to write, as because we're starting to see private insurers pull out from really high-risk areas. You know, the government coming in with its categorization framework for natural hazards, we're seeing insurers say that they're not providing insurance or going to withdraw from insurance in Category 3 areas. And that leaves a question on, okay, well, if an event, climate event, were to happen in those high-risk areas and there is no private insurance, who's on the hook to pay and how much?
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about who knew what when. As the journalist in me always wants to know when a decision was taken, what the decision maker knew when they took that decision. And the chain of decisions, if you like. And because climate change in particular and the likely intensification and more frequent climate events shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who's been paying attention. And at some point, you'd have to think there's a cutoff where If you happen to buy that big fancy house at the top of the cliff and shock horror, there's a storm and it tumbles into the sea, at what point do the rest of us say, actually, as a ratepayer or as a taxpayer, I don't feel I should have to compensate you with some very large amount of money for coastal property because you should have known.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tough conversation that we need to have as a country and kind of make a decision. And we talk about a couple of frameworks that could be applied. One of them is the ACTA framework, which is avoid, control, transfer, and accept. And at what point, you know, do you put in measures to avoid the risk or avoid the damage? At what point do you try to control for some of this risk and damage? At what point do you transfer it off to someone else? We're seeing that with the insurance scenario. And at what point do you accept? Do you accept that this is, you know, this is the risk that we're willing to take, and we're making an informed decision? But at the same time, you know, how do we want to deal with this as a country, and how do we make sure that we have a standardized approach to making these decisions, and it's not, you know, different based on where you live or who your kind of regional authority is? And it's really about, cool, well, you know, if you want to build a house on the top of a cliff, this is what you're dealing with, and this is you know either we step in or we don't.
Yeah, because at the moment we don't have a Climate Adaptation Act, which does look to answer some of these questions about sharing of the costs between governments and councils, between the government and private insurers, deciding where to build. Because as we've learnt this week, more than 1,870 houses have been approved to be built in known flood zones after the Auckland anniversary floods. And it appears that the law, resource management law, the various rules around consenting, don't actually stop a council or prevent a council from approving, you know, building in a floodplain.
There are roles to play for the various actors in this kind of overarching issue, is the fact that what can be done to de-risk some of these areas from flood impacts. So we see, for example, in Germany, you have flood passports where you can come in and get certification around and get your house assessed for flood risk. That comes with a bunch of recommendations around what you can do to then mitigate some of that risks. And insurance providers have responded to that by then kind of reducing premiums or providing discounts on premiums. And so there's always a bit of a trade-off, and there's always an action and a reaction in terms of how the market works. We really need to understand kind of what the trade-offs are. We need to understand what the likelihood of the impacts are and how big those impacts are likely to be. And that's the key missing piece right now.
Just finally, having looked at this most closely in recent months, what's your sense of who's the best informed in terms of the risks of more of these climate events and the potential damage? Who's really at the front of the curve, if you like, in terms of understanding the risks and preparing for them?
In terms of who's best informed, it really varies. There are a lot of property owners who understand their risk profile very clearly. They're making those trade-offs all the time. But at the same time, there's a lot of modeling that goes on in the insurance industry, because they have a lot of incentive to understand the risks that they are wearing when it comes to the potential of paying out an insurance claim. But at the same time, there's a lot of work being done in government, in central government, across various agencies, various ministries, various Crown departments, where there's a lot of, you know, climate impact modeling that's happening. But again, the key point isn't necessarily like who's the best informed. It's the fact that there's a lot of information that exists in each individual pocket. And what we really need to do is really bring all that information together, standardize it, and put it out there so that we can all be as informed as possible, and we can all make the best decision and decide on what trade-offs we're willing to live with for the investment that we're willing to make.
Roshan Kulwant, a senior economist at NZIER, talking there about climate risk, insurance, resilience, and preparation for another event like Gabrielle and the Auckland anniversary floods. Touch wood, hopefully not anytime soon. Roshan, thank you very much for coming on to When the Facts Change.
Thank you.
When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spin-off Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.